Billions are on the line as two tech giants battle it out. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Mark Garrison in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Google is the winner for now in a battle with software company Oracle, which it sued for $9 billion. It accused Google of stealing intellectual property, but a jury did not agree. Marketplace's Lewis Wallace is on the story. Hello, Lewis.
Good morning.
Okay, so Google makes Android. Many of us have that on our phones. Oracle makes Java. And the case is about APIs. This is not a breakfast time topic unless you're a software developer. So just explain what's going on here.
So APIs are these pieces of code that help different programs talk to each other, like little messengers. That's important for smartphones because your smartphone is talking to Twitter, talking to your email account, talking to Snapchat, and so on. The issue here is whether those tools or protocols can be subject to copyright, and if so, is there a fair use exception?
Okay, so explain what the arguments were on each side quickly.
Well, programmers, for the most part, want this stuff to be open source and available. And for the whole smartphone thing to work, you need programs developed by different companies to be able to communicate in a common language. Google says it only used a little bit of Java code, making it fair use. All of that said, Google didn't purchase a Java license when it was developing Android, and it could have. Now, Android is in use in 80% of the world's smartphones, and Oracle says it should get a kickback. Apparently, an Oracle executive actually quoted the Bible during testimony in the trial, "Thou shalt not steal."
Okay, all right. So we don't know how God feels, but the jury did not buy into that argument. What does this mean, though, just for someone who has a smartphone and just wondering what that's going to mean to them?
For now, Google and Android are in the clear, and nothing's really going to change, although Oracle will appeal this decision, most likely. For programmers, the bigger moment was probably in 2014 when a federal appeals court found that the Java APIs are protected by copyright overall. That means we could see other legal battles over code and copyright.
Okay, Marketplace's Lewis Wallace. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Walmart is stopping price matching in 500 of its stores. Customers have traditionally been able to come in with a cheaper Rivals ad and get refunded the difference, but soon they'll be able to price check on an app instead and get a gift card back, not cash. Ashley Milne-Tyatt explains what's going
on. Walmart says by doing this, it's putting low prices first. It says it's slashing prices on foods and other staples up front, so there's no need to price match. Phil Lempert of supermarketguru.com isn't buying it. He says with minimum wage going up, Walmart needs to save on costs.
If you do have a price match guarantee, you've got to go to a salesperson. The manager has to get involved. So someone there might be looking at the number of hours that they spend labor-wise managing this program.
He says it's cheaper to get customers to check prices on the store's app. Paula Rosenblum of RSR Research says the problem with this move is customer loyalty, or the lack of it.
Have they built up enough trust, and that's what this test is about, that they can, quote, promise that they'll have the best discounts and customers will believe them?
She says Walmart's no longer the low-cost provider anyway. Rivals from Amazon to Aldi have muscled in on that territory. I'm Ashley Milne-Tyatt for Marketplace.
Hi, David Brancaccio here. Thank you for listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. We give you the context we think you need to understand what's happening in the economy and why it matters to you. Some context on us. We are a nonprofit service and rely on donations from our listeners to keep going. And we've just made special Let's Do the Numbers Pilsner glasses available to thank you for your support. Donate today at marketplace.org.
As the presidential race heats up, money is pouring into campaigns and super PACs. Among the hot topics for this election, of course, immigration. But not everyone with a stake in the issue can fully engage, of course. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams reports on how people without papers are finding ways to participate.
Carlos Martinez does voter outreach for the Advocacy Alliance Center of Texas, using, among other things, a big bowl of election-themed buttons.
And we like our volunteers and our different partners to wear them whenever we have an election.
But he can't vote in those elections himself or donate money to candidates he supports. His mom brought him here illegally from Mexico when he was a kid, so he's technically a foreign national, even though he's lived in McAllen, Texas, most of his life.
Whether I'm a U.S. citizen, a resident, or undocumented, I'm still part of this community. So every laws that are being passed by politicians really affects me directly.
So like others who can't legally donate or just don't have much cash, he participates through his work activism or volunteering. Richard Brefault, who researches campaign finance at Columbia Law School, says many undocumented people are in the same situation.
They can't vote and they can't give money. That's true. But they can work in the campaign headquarters and stuff envelopes. They can knock on doors. That's not prohibited.
As for contributions, Professor Brefault says even if undocumented immigrants could give, it probably wouldn't have a huge financial impact, because usually very few people eligible to donate actually do.
Well under 10% of the population makes a campaign contribution in any election cycle. Probably in any given election, it's probably under 5% of the population.
It's annoying to Carlos Martinez. He can't buy a hat or a T-shirt from a candidate's site. Those are technically donations. He's not worried, though. Sure, money can impact an election, but he says so does his voter outreach work.
The biggest obstacle for us is that people are not even aware about the basic rules behind voting, the deadlines, the dates. Sometimes they're not even aware that we have an election happening.
He says for now, he'll focus on outreach to those who can vote and donate. I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Kimberly produced this story with support from the International Women's Media Foundation and its Adelante Latin America reporting initiative. And finally, people's habits on social media may get baby seals killed. That is the warning from wildlife officials worried about intrusive beach visitors. Here's why they're concerned. Seal moms often leave their pups at the beach while they're out finding food. It's kind of like the seal version of that playroom at IKEA. The problem is smartphone-wielding hordes then approach the cute little pups for selfies. This can scare seal moms so much that they abandon the babies. So, wildlife officials in the New England region are asking beachgoers to take a pledge: no seal selfies. And if you see someone in your feed posing with a baby seal, just don't like it. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Midday Update. APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.